Well, why don't we go ahead and get started, and hopefully we can be joined by some other members of the committee. But I want to make sure we get through everything. And Mark said that he may have to get off the call early. So why don't we start with the first item on the agenda, which is the revised draft housing recommendations chapter. So based on the feedback that I got at the previous two committee meetings, I tried to incorporate all of the discussion that was had by the committee into either new items to put into this draft chapter or to revise existing items. The way it looks right now is that we have basically the items that were discussed as the largest ongoing barriers to affordable housing for persons with disabilities at very low incomes, both the biggest consumer barrier and the biggest barrier to developers of this housing. So I put that out right out front, since that was something that has been, you know, discussed at many of these meetings about, you know, trying to say here's the barrier that occurs, and then go into the recommendations to try to address those barriers. And so then we have right now, we have 8 recommendations that this committee over the course of a number of weeks now have put together. So I wanted to see if there was anything that I missed from previous feedback or additional feedback that's new now that you've seen this latest draft.
This would be like a chapter we're thinking in?
Yes, so we're thinking that this committee's recommendations would be the housing recommendations chapter, and then the service committee's recommendations would be a service recommendation chapter.
Okay. Formatting, and I've gone back and forth on how I feel about this, so
okay.
I'm not married to either thing, but the thing that struck me on page 1
uh-huh.
was all the footnotes.
Okay.
It sort of drew my eyes down to checking all those footnotes. So I don't know, we might consider putting the footnotes at the end of the chapter.
And notes, okay.
I mean, just and I don't really care either way. It's just the reality is when I printed out, I went, oh, I want to read the footnotes. And
that's
not a good thing to do. On page 2, on number 1,
uh-huh.
I would recommend that we take out within TDHCA.
Okay, in the language of the recommendation.
Right. Because I don't know that we should be specific on that recommendation.
Oh yeah, truth be told, TDHCA may not exist too.
I didn't want to say it that way, but
yeah,
our great leaders, you just never know. So
no, I think that's a good change.
Yeah, I mean it's not anything, you know.
I think we just got someone else on the call. Who's there?
Mike Dudley.
Hey Mike, you know, I was just trying to, you know, make sure that you didn't get on the call, but that's why I sent the wrong information out.
No. Well, it would have been better. I've been hitched down in a Florida bond application.
Oh, well, you're joining us just as we just begin to discuss any comments or feedback on the revised housing committee recommendations. So, Jean, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead with what you were going to say.
Oh, darn, now Mike's on the phone, so I'm going to have to deal with the developer input. No, I'm just kidding. okay, on the next paragraph there, and this is more my trying to be sure that we're clear on what we're talking about, where it says it's like the fifth sentence down, it goes into this program could be provided as a supplement to existing capital financing sources. Are we in this discussion talking about rental subsidies, or are we talking about TDHCA would have the money to finance the construction, all parts of that unit? And it's more of a, for me to try to understand what we're looking at
right.
as far as our ask
right.
here.
Well, just looking at the discussion that was had at the last committee meeting, what I was pulling from was that you know, people are saying, okay, if we make an ask to the legislature, you know, what kind of ask are we making? And there was feedback as to saying this wouldn't be a sole source, but would be a supplement to an existing funding source. And then later on, there was the discussion of project-based rental assistance or rental subsidy as that type of supplement. And so I think that that was along the lines of where I was going, and also because when we talk about the barrier that we see to developers creating this type of housing for this population, it is that deeper income targeting that we're looking to try to achieve. And so I think that is where I was going in terms of crafting this and stating the language that I put in there. Mm-hmm. Do you think it needs to be clarified, or do you think it needs to be more general?
Well, the first line of that paragraph says, given the need for rental subsidies.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying, because I said that right there.
Yeah.
I didn't know, are we talking about capital financing? Because I understand the difference in what we're doing, but so I don't know what we're saying here. Are we saying there's a need for rental subsidies? I agree there's a need for both, but I think it's confusing on this one what we're talking about.
Development. Mm-hmm. I think what we're talking about is buying down part of the loan so they can do rent skewing on X number of units.
Okay, so then we're talking about the capital financing.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was confusion up front rather than a continuing subsidy.
So basically, it's a gap financing tool.
Yes.
Right. Like now, you can use home funds to buy 30% units. I mean, you get paid everything to construct, well, not everything, but you would have the money to develop a certain number of 30% units that cover all the costs, I'm assuming. I mean, that's kind of like, we're going to buy some units. Doesn't mean rental subsidy, which you can still need but to cover operating, but
okay.
Now we're just, our issue here is not rental subsidies, it is development subsidy or capital financing, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we might want to leave or take away the reference to rental subsidy.
Right. Yeah. So I'll remove the word rental on that first sentence of the second paragraph.
Okay.
And it can say given the need by developers for development subsidies.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All righty.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are we going to, we've sort of told them what we would like to do. Are we going to put anything about how to do it? For example, is this money just a gift, or is it repayable if the property is sold, or is it repaid upon refinancing, or is there any recourse for the funds?
That hasn't been discussed in previous committee calls. So if you want to, I mean, it's really up to the committee if you wanted to expand upon this recommendation.
Well, I think if we're talking about legislative action, the more innovation we leave the legislature, the worse it's going to be.
Sorry, what was that last part?
I say the more we leave for the legislative writers to be innovative, the worse the bill is going to turn out.
So you think that we should be more specific then?
Well, I'm just asking.
Oh.
Asking them to appropriate money on an ongoing basis. Is it like a boat? It's a sinkhole. Or is there a provision that this money comes back at some point?
Well, Mark, Gene, do you guys have a thought about that?
I might not be clear. I just presumed it was basically a buy down up front.
But as with any of these kind of programs, I mean, you have a LURA or something, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's where you're going to get it. Is you're going to write it in the LURA, and the LURA stays with property forever. So even if I sell the property, the people that buy it have got a same structure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just ensures that the sale doesn't result in excess profit.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we need to reference the Laura. I know nobody's going to do anything without having the Laura. You know what I mean? Even with safe funds, I would hope. Is that how you all do trust fund now, right? I mean, people have to have a Laura? Or is it a grant?
Laura's with tax credit deals.
Tax credit. And the bonds, right?
Yeah. And bonds.
Anything to get the tax credit has a Laura on it, essentially.
But doesn't your other funding?
Well, trust fund tends to be, for the most part, those are loan agreements. I mean, they're repayable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And if it were done with state bonds, the state bond is going to carry a Laura.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is where Mike Goodwin's expertise may come into play. I'm guessing that if a development does something like this, it's probably going to be close to the margins anyhow. I wonder if making it repayable, while politically palatable, might be taxing on a development. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Home funds have affordability periods and loan documents and everything.
Right. Yeah, HUD requires them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't see how just a 0% loan is going to incentivize much, but I'm not a developer, so that's just my thoughts.
Well, what you're doing is you're making this money available on the proviso that they hold X units for deep rent skewing, and this allows, and this what this money does is it, because you're, I'll say, paying for part of the construction, the loan that they've got to repay is less. Therefore, when they pro forma, I can pro forma, 10% of my units at market. I can do 5 or 10 or whatever the number is at deep rent skewing, and then I pro forma the rest of them at or below 60% AMI, and that's my pro forma for the development.
I see. Yeah, okay. That makes
what my proposal comes in as, because I know up front I'm going to do deep rent skewing.
Yeah.
X number of units.
So then, excuse me, Mike, do you have any suggested language there?
I don't think you put language into the authorization to say, TDHCA, make sure you cover this in the LORA.
Okay.
I think TDHCA then becomes the executor of deciding, what percentage you would offer this money for, whether it be 5% deep skew or 10% deep skew. I think that's a TDHCA decision.
Okay. Okay. Well, then, is there any other comment on this recommendation, or should we move on?
We can move on. Okay. Just as a sidelight, those documents we had from the 8/11 meeting had a property on Atticus out in the Lubbock area where they had deep rent skewing because they were able to get a grant. So they had like 10% or 15% of their units were 30% of the resident's income. And then they had another tier that was at or below 60% of AMI. So by getting the grant, they were able to, set aside X number of units for the deep rent skews. And this is exactly what you're talking about doing here. But there is a formula, actually, in one of those 8/11 documents.
Okay. Recommendation is fine as is. Right. Yeah. I think we should leave the recommendation as is. Then, we have the knowledge though of what it would require once implemented. If the legislature saw fit to. Are there any comments on other recommendations within this draft chapter?
Oh, yeah. This is Jean. On number 2, all right, at the last paragraph, it says, if adequate funding is appropriated by the legislature, another option would be to provide a rental subsidy?
So that was based on the feedback that you all provided, not at the last committee meeting, but at the one before that, where there were multiple ideas thrown out for how to reward those housing tax credit applicants that would propose to go above and beyond the current requirements of the qualified allocation plan. And so, you know, some of you were saying, oh, let's do bonus points, or, and another idea that was thrown out by the members was, or they could be given some form of rental subsidy if one existed as a reward for going above the current requirements, either by setting aside additional units for persons with disabilities or setting aside a greater proportion of units at 30% of AMI.
I realize that what I'm kind of looking at, well, just a sense of adequate funding is appropriated by the legislature, but we're not asking for adequate funding. We're not asking for any funding. They're not going to do it out of the goodness of their heart. Now, I may be wrong, but Michael Lytle probably would shore me up on this. They don't do a whole lot without getting some kind of recommendation somewhere. So I'm wondering if we want to make a recommendation.
Okay, so, and perhaps that was my confusion. So we have recommendation number one, which is for the legislature to provide development subsidy, and
correct.
And you're saying to make a second recommendation where they would provide rental subsidy.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, that way they have a choice. No, they can do both, which we know they'll probably do neither, but.
Well, you never know unless you ask.
That's right.
Okay, so.
So some of the same kind of language, but we put in a recommendation for rental subsidy. I mean, it's the whole stuff we referred to, I guess, in another document about North Carolina. I mean, we've all coveted that program.
Absolutely, and it's my fault. I guess maybe I didn't realize that there were two separate legislative funding recommendations that were talked about previously. I think maybe I was rolling them into one in my head, but I will separate them out and make sure we have one for the rental subsidy piece, for sure.
Sounds good to me. We can ask. We might as well ask. I mean, if we don't ask, nobody's going to ask.
The only caution is that the developmental subsidy is a one-time fund.
Mm-hmm. I know, and the other is. But so is bootstrap.
Perpetual. In other words, if 3 years from now they decide to do away with the development incentive, those properties that are developed have no impact whatsoever because it's already done. But you can't do the same with a rental subsidy because you say, well, we're no longer going to fund that subsidy, and you got 2,000 vouchers sitting out there, all of a sudden it might be unfunded.
Well, I know, but we live with that with the feds all the time. I mean,
but a year to year, right?
8-11, I mean, truly, and now I heard one of the political candidates say they're going to target HUD. I thought, okay, so what do we do with all these units they do away with HUD? And where goes our subsidy? So, I mean, there's some, I think it's worth trying, and it would be a risk, obviously, from everybody. But we do that seriously all the time with the feds.
Well, but have you ever seen HUD not fund the voucher?
No.
On the other hand, just remember the story of Soylent Green.
But I think it's the same as we reference the owner-builder loan program.
Yeah.
That's been, how many years has that been funded? 1999?
99 was when the first enabling legislation was, and then 01 is the legislation directing a continuation of funding.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Okay. All right. So I'll make sure to add that recommendation in. That way the second paragraph of recommendation 2 makes sense.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other thoughts, or I guess on the thoughts on recommendations 3 through 8?
Okay, number 3. I have obviously had some time to read these. Top of page 4. And this, again, is my ignorance, and I know we've talked about this. So currently, tax credits have a 12-month requirement to set aside their units.
Right. So in our compliance rules, for those units that are the ones that have been set aside as part of the special needs population set aside, those would be required to be held vacant unless they're occupied by a person with a special need for 12 months.
Now, and Michael may remember, it used to be 6 months, and then it was increased to 12 months?
I honestly don't remember, Jean.
Yeah, I kind of remember this, and I remember developers getting pretty upset. And I don't know that it was instigated by anybody particularly. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it wasn't, to my knowledge, the disability community, at least the one I run in. I don't think it was our recommendation.
I would change the wording on that and take out the thing about either be occupied. I would just say the 12-month set-aside requirement for units must be held, a vacant unit must be held for 12 months or leased to a person with disabilities is burdensome. Because if it's occupied, it's not burdensome because it's already occupied.
Right.
It's a non-issue. So the burden is having to take now, are we talking about initial lease-up, or are we talking about any time you've got five units? Any time one of those five units is vacant, you've got to hold that unit a year? I am just now placing my project in service, so I can't rent those units to anyone else for the first year.
I believe it's once the units come online, I think that's the 12-month requirement.
Okay, now what about after my first resident moves out? Do I have to hold it vacant again?
I'd
be pretty specific on this one, because if you're ambiguous, we'll end up having the judge settle it.
Yeah, we'll check into that.
I'll double check that.
Yeah. Regardless, it's burdensome because of the time.
That's because you treat it.
But we'll look at have to do it every time you go, you know, you're below your number of units, having to hold it for a year.
Sure, sure.
So we're trading out. Basically, what we're saying in recommendation number three is we're recommending stiffer regulations on affirmative marketing.
Yeah.
That we feel will, as a trade-off, it's more proactive to try to get people in rather than the negative holding it open. I don't know, for a year.
I think you can think of it that way, is that you know, we're trying to say, let's get at the way in which we can do for better outreach and more frequent outreach, so that way if the rules actually quantify this, the frequency and the volume, then we're trying to get our target population. Instead of, and then we're saying, you know, that the 12-month requirement we already know is burdensome to you. So if you're putting more effort in up front on the outreach end, then maybe you shouldn't be having to hold those units as long.
Okay. Well, the way the last sentence reads sounds like you're answering a whiner. In order to mitigate this unfortunate circumstance, which is that you got a unit, you can't rent, you're losing income. And instead of more affirmative housing, just shorten the period for me. Now, take that thing about aggressive affirmative fair marketing housing out, because they should be aggressively marketing as soon as that unit goes vacant. And so that portion sounds like we're trying to say, well, we don't want them to have to market too much, so we'll just shorten the period.
Okay, so I'll just remove the phrase in between the commas.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Should we move on to the next one?
Number four?
Yeah.
The quarterly, and I know we had this discussion, but I can't remember. Quarterly housing, housing tax credit compliance training does not cover fair housing workshops. while PDHA holds quarterly HTC compliance training workshops.
So those are supposed to go over all of the state and federal requirements, which include affirmative marketing efforts. So they're supposed to touch on affirmative marketing efforts, but the idea was to create a entirely separate training that was specific to affirmative marketing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would just replace the word administer with promote, where it says the council recommends that PDHA partner with existing fair housing organizations to promote these workshops.
And promote.
Because I don't think you're going to administer the workshop.
Okay.
And I think it'd be good to, because you all, well, on your homebuyer ed counselor, you actually put on the training and then the individual is certified as a housing counselor, not the organization. But I see you're basically saying a fair housing entity could be approved as a provider of this kind of training.
And that, yes, and that was based on the feedback that I received two meetings ago on this particular one, was that, you know, the idea was that instead of TDHCA, doing this work that we already have existing entities around the state that could basically submit the type of curriculum that they have PDHCA to approve, and I think that will also be a bit less onerous if we have existing organizations that already have existing curriculum, but to make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of what the affirmative marketing education is.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have staff at PDHC who have both the qualifications and the time to certify people as trainers of affordable housing marketing plans? And if you do, are you going to keep track?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have compliance staff who are very knowledgeable about all of the required state and federal regulations and that include the affirmative marketing plan. So I think that we have already the expertise in-house to know what type of education would be the best or required, I guess. I don't know are you saying that this would be a lot of added work?
Well, if you're going to start naming people as qualified affordable fair housing plan trainers, you've got to do that to some standard, and you have to have somebody who's qualified to say they meet the standard, and that just doesn't mean, well, they've been here 5 years, they've worked with the plans before. That means they've been trained somewhere and have something behind their authority to say you're qualified. Once you say they're qualified, then somebody's got to keep track of who you say is qualified. Because how do you know if I'm submitting an application and you want to know that my people have been trained and I say, yeah, they were trained by Lackanuckee Incorporated, and you have no idea whether that person was certified by PDHCA or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. We would,
You're creating, what I'm saying is you're creating a certification and tracking program that does not currently exist, and do you have the resources and the staff to do it?
I don't think that doing a tracking and a certification would be an undue burden and be a very large, in terms of man hours. I don't think that it would be too costly. I think that it would be something that at least the way that we've discussed it, could be very feasible to incorporate into our current compliance division.
Okay. I just threw the caution up there because I got into this when we started certifying housing credit professionals through NAMA, and we partnered with the Apartment Association to do that. And, you got to have train the trainers, and somebody's got to determine that the trainers are qualified, and somebody's got to determine that the firm people that determine that the trainers are qualified, and then what you do, somebody has got to start keeping track of who you've qualified. And that's, I'm just saying,
And I think, and we can certainly add in language about PDHCA tracking, you know, their approvals and ensuring that the compliance department has, you know, fully implemented this whole process.
Okay. I'd like to say it was just caution because you're creating something that doesn't exist within THCA, and I didn't want you to throw one out there and then have to hide your car when you come in the morning because they're hunting for you.
No, we can always just say no. And get Ching going.
Hey, did
somebody else join the call?
Join the call?
We may have lost Mark. He said he had to go around.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. I'm just wondering if you all could check with them on this whole recommendation and where they might fit in this recommendation.
With T-shirt?
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean.
Okay.
There is another housing agency that does multifamily. And I'm like, if we're going to make recommendations, we need to cover all the bases.
Sure.
So I don't know if anybody had a discussion with them. I don't know what they do on their front of, on number three either, affirmative marketing. So it might be something we want to look across all. And of course, CDBG. No, I'm just kidding. I know they don't do housing. I'll keep trying. Anyway, I think it might be worth when we talk about bond or we talk about anything in reference to bonds or multifamily, we need to be also making sure we're hitting all funders.
Okay.
That are state controlled in some way or another.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'll ask Dave if he has what he thinks about that.
Okay.
About looking at number four in reference to TSHAC.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. So should we move on to number five?
Sure.
Okay.
The last sentence on the page, housing applicants, and I know Mike's going to love me for this one. Given that the majority of supported housing applicants are nonprofit organizations, the council recommends that the nonprofit set aside be increased to 20% and include language which prioritizes blah, blah, blah.
I think that we would need to change the focus of the recommendation, right? I guess it could be two within one.
To increase and yeah.
Because that would then be, you know, it's that's kind of part A and then part B of the recommendation. So do we want to do two in one there?
The council recommends the state legislature amend the nonprofit set aside. I'm just saying, yeah.
Okay.
They increase it. Ha, huh? Two. If we're going to get this done, I mean, we say it's being done by
okay.
them.
20%, huh?
Maybe I'll end up with 15? No.
I thought it was 20% for everybody else.
Okay.
Hey, start high.
Okay. I will insert that language then. Okay. Anything else on number five, or do you want to move on to number six?
Yeah, let's move.
Yeah.
All right.
So thoughts on number six?
I get hung up with the as a supportive housing.
Okay. So the language that's used currently in the 2AP?
Yeah, I mean, if we're pushing service and rich housing, let's push service and rich housing. And I could probably... I don't know. What we're doing is just walking around supported housing as if it's service and rich, correct?
Well, in those instances in the QAP where it currently says supportive housing, I think that was where the committee members saw their opportunity to provide input. So I think that was kind of by default. You know, I mean, you're right that the instances where it talks about supportive housing is where we're making our recommendations.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
because is that a legislative supportive housing, or that's a agency?
Oh, the phrase?
Yeah. I mean, that we're using, is this shows up in the QAP because of the legislature or because of the agency? Again, I don't know.
I think that stems more from TEHCA and not statute.
Okay. So it's not we're trying, because this isn't a recommendation to have something legislatively changed. This is
right.
We're basically working around in these recommendations under a category that TDHCA has developed, not the legislature.
I think it's maybe defined in the QAP, not in statute. Supportive housing, that phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Mike's right on that one. So in terms of what you're going along the lines of including a new definition or changing the current phrasing and adding a new.
Yeah, I mean, we've all struggled with this. Well, not we all, but there's been some struggle with this whole service-enriched housing, where it came from, and I mean, it came, and we've got it, and we defined it. But are we different than supportive housing? Or should we just recommend that we start calling it service-enriched housing now and take over supportive housing in the larger discussion? But I'm just trying to figure out, as this committee, what we're trying to do here. If we're just trying to say, okay, TDHA, you already have supportive housing, let's try to fit this little new peg into this hole. Or do we say, okay, well, the legislature said we now have service-enriched housing, so, you know, we're going to try to be the big dogs and tell, you know.
Sure. I mean,
Michael, you get me?
No, I think that's fair. I think
so,
I mean, I think that you're right in terms of this, what is supportive housing versus service-enriched housing is a very large philosophical argument that there are a lot of different viewpoints on. But in terms of just the practical side of things, you're right in the fact that we do have a definition for service-enriched housing that we were asked by the legislature to create.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a problem with. I mean, I think that would be a separate recommendation, a new recommendation about.
Are they interchangeable? I mean, well, I guess this would be a question. I'm not sure who would answer this question, but I think we need to sort of look at that.
You're saying they're not interchangeable.
Are they? I don't know if they are.
Oh, okay.
And I'm saying that's a kind of a larger philosophical debate, really, that is being waged by, I think there are a lot of organizations that use supportive housing to primarily mean a homeless population that may have a co-occurrence of a disability, and I think that, or there are some that don't see that prioritization of homeless over others. But so I think that is a debate that's had. I don't think that it's outside the realm of what we're doing with this chapter to say that we want to recommend that the QAP change the supportive housing language to service-enriched housing language.
Hey, I'm for that.
Okay, that's interesting.
We're putting all this effort.
Yeah, no, I am. Okay. Okay. Anything else on number 6? Or 7 and 8.
I had a big question on number 7. I mean, just a question mark.
Okay.
I think I'm, I don't know, Mike, what do you feel about that? Increasing it. I just some history.
Uh-huh.
Before we got that legislatively in place, every QAP was different, and I know the compliance department was going crazy, because every time a QAP was considered, the accessibility way that it would be done, I think one year we unsuccessfully got any accessibility requirements in there. So I'm a little bit hesitant to mess with this, because it's very difficult for the compliance division to know under which QAP the, you know, how many units have to be made accessible. So
Patricia Murphy would really appreciate you for that.
Well, no, and I know we for years, I mean, back in the old days, we'd get all upset and, you know, about something. They'd go, oh, no, that one was developed under this QAP, so they didn't have to do this. And so one of the reasons there was a big push to get something done through, I think that was a sunset or whatever it was, the big bill, you know, was that it, we would have some consistency, and because the feds have that, you know, that way if they got federal funds, it was, everybody was going to have that 5%, 2%, so.
Okay.
I mean, they can choose to do more. I don't know that I want to do a, I'm concerned about doing a scoring point thing, because then it becomes crazy to comply with.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So we can remove that one. Number eight?
I hate number eight. Sorry. I don't think it, I just don't think it fits. You guys just need to do that. I mean, you just need to work with the disability advisory work group or whatever through the queue. I mean, we need to be more involved, and I can tell you why we're not. I'm maybe one of the few people that even understand what the QAP does, and I got tired of, and no offense to Mike, but I don't go to the QAP roundtable because there's no discussion of the kind of issues I'm concerned about. It's all developer discussions.
Well, keep in mind, any public comment that's made to us, you know, at the QAP, we have to provide a reasoned response. So
yeah,
we're going to tell you, no, we're not going to do that. We have to have a reason that's, you know, somewhat valid as to why.
Yeah, but I mean, I know the disability community has been criticized for several years. Well, you don't even get involved in the QAP workshop. And I'm like, I tried to get people involved, and it is very technical in nature, oftentimes, at least the QAP workshops that I used to participate in. They're very time-consuming because they wanted you to be involved in a whole lot of meetings when we had one issue. And so once we got it legislatively mandated to have so many units, it was kind of something. So I don't like that recommendation. So
yeah, I would tend to agree, going back and thinking about it and reading on a little bit, that if you are already conducting outreach to concerned parties when you do a QAP, you know, you're going to low income, you're going to communities, you're going to serve. You know, at what point, you know, next year we're going to come back and tell you, well, now you need to do a special outreach to this group, and now you need to do a special outreach to that group. And I think pretty soon everybody wants to be special, and by creating more special groups, you know, all pigs are equal except maybe me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it fits.
Okay.
Good. So we don't have to do outreach to the disability community.
That's right. There you go. No,
you don't have to do special outreach.
The DAW. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's a good point.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
I know. So.
That's good. That's good.
Okay.
Be careful, because tomorrow the paper's going to say TDHCA decides to not talk to triple.
Yeah. exactly.
Okay. All right. So then the other document that was provided was based on, there was the some confusion at our last call about looking at the 2010-2011 plans recommendations versus the ones that have been crafted in the last couple months. And so what I wanted to do for all of you is to say, okay, here is the recommendation in its entirety from 2010-2011. Here's what we've put in our draft chapter one as to the follow-up on that recommendation or potential progress on that recommendation. And then the third thing is ideas for committee action, which is to say, does it make sense to recommend this again, given that we may have already covered it this time around. So we don't want to duplicate, we don't want to have duplication, but we also want to make sure that in case there was a really good idea from the last plan that we haven't talked about yet at all, that maybe it makes sense to include it again. So that's why I made this document for everybody and hopefully cleared up any confusion that there was a last time around what recommendations were from the last plan and what ones were from this plan or this planning process. So if you look through the document, we do have a lot of overlap with the recommendation, the first, four recommendations from 2010-2011. The first four do have a significant amount of overlap between what we're now putting forward.
And so what we're looking at is what would be a draft chapter where you have chapter one follow-up. I mean, you have what you're proposing to put in as follow-up, correct? And then I see, and then you give us the italics, which is great, so we can say, I mean, we're not looking for additional recommendations on some of these.
Right, so I'm saying, here's what was in the last plan. Here's the section of draft chapter one which addresses the progress made on that recommendation. And so, therefore, if we've made progress on it or if we've already recommended something that overlaps with it, do we even need it again?
Right. So my comments, my comment on number two, your follow-up, just be sure and put multifamily capital financing, third line down, multifamily capital financing provided by TDHCA/TSHAC, because we do actually reference TSHAC up above.
Okay.
You know, or something. Somehow it's not just TDHCA.
Okay.
And then as it overlaps, let me see. And then I don't have another comment until number five.
Okay. So is there some consensus that the first four recommendations we've pretty much kind of replaced those with some new ones now? So these first four, it seems like that we can do away with the old ones and just bring in the new that we just discussed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you are moving to number five.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know that we want to repeat that. And I guess my question was why? Why wasn't this done? I mean, I'm trying to deal in my head, wrap my head around. Okay, we made these recommendations. I'm kind of like, well, so are we? Why would we recommend it again if it wasn't done the first time we recommended it? And I guess I want to know why it wasn't done.
So the discussion that was had at the June 2011 roundtable discussion on the Housing Trust Fund's priorities, the feedback that was received at that was for the three programs that got funded that I list there.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of...
Did they consider our recommendation?
the people at the roundtable?
No, did Housing Trust Fund consider our recommendation?
The only thing I Jean.
Yeah.
It's Michael Lytle. The only thing I can figure on that is that, well, a couple of things. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have any money.
Right.
Well, I know that.
No, I think, because I talked, this is what I talked to Ashley about earlier today. You know, there's this question of, well, how does the TDHCA, you know, get recommendations from the council? How do they hear things? And I'm guessing that in his role as presiding officer with Mike Gerber, that you all probably assumed that with him being at the meeting and hearing this, that was sort of the message to TDHCA, hey, we as a council think you need to consider doing this in the trust fund.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what happened beyond that. You know, I don't know if Mike relayed that to staff or how that might have worked. Unfortunately, I don't know.
I mean, I know that I gave a copy of the biennial plan to the manager of the Housing Trust Fund when it came out. I don't know if there was executive, the previous chair's actions taken on this. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and so here's my dilemma, or in looking at this, your all's response here is, well, we had a round table. Well, I know you had a round table, but we made a recommendation. So, I mean, I think the response here needs to say, I don't know, finesse it somehow, but it wasn't the legislature, and you're saying it, the legislature directed some of these.
Well, what you could say, you know, the recommendation was made, but the department did not include the recommendation in its plan.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think you need to say.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, it's that whole,
okay,
the
so
role of the council, and that's always my concern on these input things, is we just want to give the recommendation, then we want somebody to consider it and tell us why it wasn't considered. I mean, I know there's other processes. There's always other processes, but councils and things are created, you know, to make recommendations, so we need to know what happened to it. And it, you know, as I've always said, I'm okay with a no. Just, you know, tell me it was considered or not considered, and, you know.
And so I can revise the language, because I do say at the end of that section, none of the funding recommendations made in the 2012-2013 Housing Trust Fund Plan are specific to service and rich housing.
Yes, but I don't think we need to say anything about Amy Young.
Okay,
I mean,
you're
sort of defending, and the way I read it, while the Amy Young program does provide accessibility modifications, we didn't say that. We never. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That wasn't part of our recommendation. I know you all are. I know TDHCA is trying to do good things, but the council didn't say anything.
Yeah. No. That's we're guilty of wearing our TDHCA hat there. As well. That's fair.
And I'm not going to let you. No. So anyway.
Keep us honest.
I know.
So okay. So I removed the first part of that sentence. Are you saying we should remove the discussion on what the funding is being used for currently?
Correct.
Okay, so you want to remove all discussion on the current use of Housing Trust Fund?
Just say there wasn't, I mean, I think, not the excuse, but the reasoning is we didn't have the money we thought we had when we made the recommendation. I mean, I understand why there's no money in service and rich housing. We're lucky to have funded anything we were doing before.
Yeah, so but you're saying you don't want to state that.
Yeah, I think it's too defensive.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm happy to work.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just an honest, we didn't get half the money. We didn't get the money we thought we were going to get at all.
Right.
And several of the programs got removed.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
nothing was added.
Well, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, just nothing was added. There was no money to add anything. So
several things were cut.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason.
That's more of a recommendation. I think we should recommend it again. I don't know why. No, I mean, if you know what I'm saying, that we would want to put something in when there is money, or somehow finesse it, a new recommendation that talks about, well, we've already said that, actually, in our new recommendations. We've already said, legislature put some money in.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying it's housing trust fund. I'm just saying legislature give us some money. So,
You know, given that the funding was cut, should I be referencing that funding was cut?
Yeah. I mean, I think in your all's defense, that would be why you would have never considered this recommendation. There was no money to consider, really, to do anything new. I think more of a paragraph talking about, well, I think it's very significant that the legislature made you take money and put it in veterans. I mean, I think that's legitimate. I think that's a reasoned response or follow-up.
Right. And I think part of that's already stated when the 20, under that recommendation and that paragraph where it's under follow-up, I think they talked about the appropriation. And
yeah. So I think you just
delete
need
part of that.
Yeah. And then we know bootstrap takes, so we're kind of left with nothing.
Right, and that's
very little.
Get in there about the $3 million that goes to bootstrap.
Yeah.
So that part remains.
Mm-hmm.
And so, do you still want a recommendation specifically for the housing trust fund next time, or?
Well, if there's no more money.
Oh, you hold their feet to the fire. Say, in spite of being blown off by the last meeting.
Anyhow.
It's your choice.
No, I mean, the reality is those new recommendations, we talk about trying to get new money. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, you're right in terms of, like, how many, because I think that this was mentioned at, I think it was the last call, maybe the one before, but, you know, do we want to put forward, you know, these are our priorities, or do we want to say, here's a scattershot way of trying to get money?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I think that is a good point, that, you know, putting it in here, are we saying to the legislature, well, if you didn't accept recommendations A and B, here's C? Or, I mean, it just depends on how you guys want to craft the set of recommendations, how you want to approach it.
Yeah, you probably need to harmonize all of those into something. Y'all there?
Yeah.
I mean, we could take a swing at it here, you know, by staff and see if we can come up with something that's amenable to you all, if you want to do that.
Yes, that sounds good.
Basically, what I think she's saying, Ashley, is that we should take the recommendation where they're asking for more money, money, period.
Yeah.
And sort of harmonize all of them into one element that would incorporate this and the other ones. Because you were suggesting, I think, to Jean and Mike that right now it's kind of more of a scattershot thing where we have several of them, and I've mentioned we should probably congeal it all into one recommendation.
See, we said in the ones we just went through, the new recommendations, we talked about rental subsidies, we talked about development subsidies. I'm not saying, I don't know if the legislature would put that in the trust fund or what. Maybe they would. Maybe that would be how it would come down. I mean, we're asking for legislation for service-enriched housing. Last time we asked TDHCA, assuming there was going to be more trust fund, I think, that money was going to be in trust fund, that's where we were going to try to get service-enriched housing.
Or in terms of the follow-up, perhaps you can go back and reference the new recommendations.
Yeah. That might be a good way to tie it in.
Yeah, you see what I mean, Ashley?
So, sorry. So, revising recommendation, the previous recommendation number 5 about the housing trust fund, say something about...
No. Keep 5 the same,
okay,
right now.
Follow-up.
And in the follow-up, as we talked earlier, you know, reference that the council had recommended it. It wasn't done. You know, everyone expected more money than what was received.
Uh-huh.
But then go on to reference that, you know, the council still reiterates the need for additional or for funding.
Okay.
And you can reference at that point the other recommendations that were brought forth for 12-13.
Okay. So in my draft chapter one, I'm adding something about what the council would like to reference recommendations that are in chapters that come after that. Because I'm just trying to figure out the way that, because the way that it'll be structured, you know, in the whole plan is that there's that the chapter one is saying, here was the last set of recommendations, here's the progress that's been made on them, and then it's not until a few chapters later that we actually get to the new set of recommendations. So I don't know how.
Well, I think you could reference that in chapter one and indicate, you know, chapter three or whatever
see
new recommendations.
Yeah, the council is now has worked through some of these issues and reference the new recommendations.
Okay.
Number six, are we off?
Yep, we're ready.
Kind of the same thing in the response. You all talk about, well, actually, it's all TSHAC, right? Their governing board, what they do.
We do reference CDAC and TSHAC. Oh, you mean the response?
Your response. It references both, but the response is only TSHAC.
You're right. That's true. I think that just came out of the fact that I had gotten TSHAC had provided a very lengthy reasoning to me, and so yeah, you're right. I don't have PDHA in there.
But it's the same thing, quite honestly. We're being told what everybody goes through, their process. Well, we made our recommendations. Okay, they didn't get considered? And I'm guessing they didn't by TSHAC's board either. They say they will consider it, TSHAC's board, for the 2013 multifamily bond program, which is great. I don't know if we missed the deadline. I really can't tell from this response. Was it that our recommendations were too late and they weren't considered?
I think that when Paige sent this information to me, was saying that they decided for the 2012 RFP to say that one of the four categories they were going to highlight was supportive housing development.
Right.
Okay, so were we saying that there was...
And then she goes, then they go on to say, this feedback will be considered. And they recently received the feedback. That's because during their feedback, I took the recommendation and wrote them and said, okay, the council said this. How about you do this? And I thought, now why am I doing this as an advocate when I sit on the council? So my sense is we made these recommendations, but really there was a report that nobody considered as input. I'm just thinking process here. It sounds like both agencies sat on the council and were involved in the council, but they weren't considered in their public comment. They weren't considered as recommendations in their process.
Gene, that's what I spoke to you about yesterday, and I talked to Elizabeth and Ashley about today. I think that's where the disconnect is coming from, is that, you know, the primary vehicle here being the biennial plan, while it goes to the legislature every 2 years, but what's missing is there's no communication or no official comment to either agency, you know, hey, we as a council think you need to be doing X.
Yeah, please keep the, even though we say this is our recommendation, I don't know, we needed a cover memo that said, please consider this in your planning process.
Yeah, so I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
That the council, you know, needs to send those communiques to the agency saying, hey, FYI, this is one of our recommendations. And then that way, you know, then the agency also is required to, you know, because it's official public comment, the agency is required to provide a reasoned response. So if the answer is yes, great. If it's no, well, then they're going to give you a reason why it's no.
Yeah, I mean, so the follow-up, again, your chapter follow-up needs to be not so much this is the process. It's like, no, we didn't, you know, I don't know how you finesse it, but the reality is our recommendations did not get considered.
See what she's saying.
And yeah, you can finesse it. I know you can. So,
Okay.
And there's a great line. Well, it says this feedback. Well, I hope the council's feedback will be considered by the TSHAC board for the 2013 multifamily bond program.
Okay.
Okay.
Hold on, Elizabeth's got a thought.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. move on to number 7 or the rest of them.
I think I didn't have any more.
Really?
I think you wore me down. No. I was like, oh my God, I'm realizing the reality is nobody paid any attention to our recommendations.
Mike, did you have any feedback?
No.
Okay. So I can make revisions to the sections that are the draft chapter 1 sections. We didn't really get to the answer of, are we recommending any of these again in our recommendations chapter, or are we just saying that the council still sees these as a priority in our draft chapter 1? Because I didn't know if we wanted to say that the ones from 2010, 2011 that we still want to recommend again would then get incorporated into the committee's recommendations chapter, or if they would just get referenced in chapter 1 as to here's the progress that has been made, and the council would like to say that this is a continuing priority.
Well, if something was done and we want it done, we need to put it back in again.
Well, the rest of them were all substantially fulfilled. I mean,
so then we're looking at
well, except for the last one. I said yes on number 11. I would like, I'll keep making that recommendation. But
so for 5, 6, and 11 then? Are those the ones that we're looking at?
Repeating. Yeah, I mean, we'll, and maybe if we do it like Michael says with a cover letter saying we really want this.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will. I'll include those then again in our newest chapter then on recommendations.
Yeah. How about something like, "Hey, we're not kidding."
Thank you. this really is what we're recommending. Can you all consider it? No.
No, I think we will. We're going to improve the process so that the recommendations will get to the right entities.
Okay.
Okay, those were the main items for this council meeting, or sorry, committee meeting. The only last outstanding thing that I had from my previous notes was on an exceptional item concerning service-enriched housing. And so just to update those on the call, so right now I'm looking into the possibility that as the council coordinator, I could myself go before the TDHA governing board at their June 14th meeting and read out loud a letter on behalf of the council expressing their interest in including this exceptional item in TDHA's 2014-2015 LAR. So given the feedback that we received, that's the route that I'm exploring right now.
Okay.
So that letter would then be approved by the whole council at their May 15th meeting. So that's something that's coming up for the May 15th meeting.
That'll be an agenda item.
Yes, an agenda item, yeah. Okay. So then just so that both of you know, the next committee meeting will actually be the last committee meeting, which is May 2nd. And so that's going to be the last call.
May 2nd. Oh, that's okay. That's a Wednesday, right? Okay. Wednesday.
Yeah, you're busy May 3rd.
That's right. Okay. Sorry.
May 2nd, yeah, that's at 2 p.m., and that'll be our last call, and then we'll have the in-person full council meeting on May 15th.
Okay.
So that's our kind of looking at the dates over the next few weeks, months. Is there anything else, any outstanding business?
I don't think so. Thank you, Ashley. Yeah. You put a lot of work into this, and we really do appreciate it. It's just now when we get into the recommendations. I do pay attention, obviously, and read it. So I appreciate it.
Feedback. It's good to get the feedback, and I'll make sure I make the edits and additions before our May 2nd meeting.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You, ma'am.
Bye-bye.